welcome to episode 280 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's and a special guest. So, M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you this week.
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and you can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. And special guest, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jim Keller, and you can find me on Twitter at Mumbo Jimbo.
Welcome, Jim. So Jim is joining us this week to talk about the latest entry in the Almodovar series, which is our continuation of the Most Iconic Director series we kicked off earlier this year. And of course, we're talking about Pedro Almodovar. And this week it is Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down from 1990. And this is, among other things that's of interest to talk about on this film, one of the bigger things about it, it's most famous for helping usher in the NC-17 rating. Because it would have been slammed with an X, and there was a whole Harvey Weinstein lawsuit and all this stuff that happened about it. So we're going to talk about that and more here on this week's edition of the Water Cooler Podcast. But first, we're going to hop into Coronavirus Corner and talk about what we've been binging to keep our sanity in check as best we can. So welcome, Jim. Very happy to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Great to have you.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, Jim, what is one or two things that you've been watching this week to kind of keep your sanity in check as we've been sort of staying at home to avoid getting dead?
So I live in New York City, and as you know, we're one of the epicenters of the virus. So I kind of regressed. And some people around me, just to share, they've regressed by like baking bread and making their comfort foods, but I've regressed visually. So I used to watch religiously Vampire Diaries, and I did not finish the series. In 2015, I was planning my wedding. And that was during season 7, and I fell behind, and I was like, okay, I can't, I'm out. So I finished season 7. So oh, that nice. Was cool. Yeah. And then I watched We're Here Today, which is the new drag culture coming to a small town near you show on HBO. Highly recommended if you haven't seen it. And I've also watched both episodes of Run so far.
Nice. Excellent. Yeah. Megan, I know you've probably been catching up on movies.
Yes, I've watched 3 movies. I watched Psycho, and I watched Apocalypse Now and Platoon.
And what was your favorite of the 3?
I think it was Platoon. I think I really liked Platoon. Even though it has, you know, Charlie Sheen in it, which I'm not like a huge fan of his, but I'm like, oh, well, he was like a legit, you know, you forget he was like a legit actor in the 80s. it's funny, but it's a really strong cast. Like, oh, my gosh, Keith David, one of my favorites. I can't not see him and not think of the dad and There's Something About Mary. It's got an amazing cast. Also, Willem Dafoe and Tom Berenger. Yeah, it's great. I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad I finally got to watch. I probably have seen bits. That's the thing. I've probably seen bits and pieces of a lot of these movies, but I just want to like enjoy them all together. So that's what I did.
Excellent. Joey, what about you?
I watched 3 movies this week. Not classic films. Probably not very good ones. If you want to watch Sean Hayes play a woman. I watched a movie called Lazy Susan, which has a much better cast probably than it deserves. And then, like, I remember people were just like, oh, that probably wasn't that good. I was like, no, it wasn't. But it's just Sean Hayes in a dress being really lazy. I'll watch that on a loop for the rest of my life. And then I watched The Turning, just don't. And then I just watched a gay movie that I will be reviewing on the site called 15 Years from Israel. And
It's Israel. An accent on is?
It's real. And then I watched God, what did I watch? I watched Hollywood, which I can't talk about because the embargo is still down. But I can talk about it later.
Excellent.
I like the way you said that. Later.
Later. I've been catching up on screeners. I'm not sure if I can talk about them yet or not. So I'm just going to opt not to. Every Saturday night, we've kind of devolved, maybe. I don't know. We've started the Moy Family Movie Night and are introducing movies to the kids that were our favorites growing up or, classics that we've liked and watched multiple times. And last night's was War Games, which I was very interested in seeing how they would react to 1980, 1981 technology. And like they humored me. That's what they did. They humored me. I've never felt older than watching that movie, which I still love. Like, it's just an immensely entertaining film to me. They were watching that thing and they just like, they looked at the computer and the literal phone on a cradle modem. And they were like, what's that? Like, it just was like, they had no idea what was going on. It was kind of funny, but sad. That was one of our things. Next week, I think we're going to watch The Sixth Sense.
Ooh. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I found out that my nephew just watched Little Giants for the first time. And that's one of my favorites. And he was asking me questions and I'm like, oh, that's so cute.
Oh. All right. So we are going to segue over now to the main topic here, which is Almodovar's Time Me Up, Time Me Down. And that's why we've got Jim here on the podcast. So, Jim, why don't you give us a brief overview of the plot of Time Me Up, Time Me Down?
Sure. So it concerns a former mental patient named Ricky, who takes a porn/horror movie star prisoner in the hopes of getting her to fall in love with him and marry him.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah. it's a lot like Beauty and the Beast, I think.
Yeah.
This movie could have been called Stockholm Syndrome, a love story.
Yeah. You know, I described it as, what if you made Misery as a romantic comedy?
That is kind of true too. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Joey.
Nothing. I was just gonna say, the whole time I was watching, I was like, oh God, this movie could never come out now.
Like, I know.
Oh God. Anytime you a movie that's like, you know, from like 2000 or older, I feel like, I don't know.
To sort of put all of that to the side. Like,
yeah.
That's just it. Yeah, that's what you have to do.
And I kept thinking, like, watching it, I'm like, please don't tell me that this is going to end with, not that we're skipping to the ending already, but it does end like romantic comedy. But there's something, there's a cynicism to it that I like, and we can talk about it when we talk about the final scene, but that I totally get. At first I was like, as a woman, I feel like I should be like, no way. But I appreciate it because I tied some things together. Tied me up some things together.
Oh, thank God.
So, Jim, when we were sending out the call to have people join the podcast to talk about Almodovar's movies, I assume that this was something of interest to you. Tell us why you like this movie as much as you do.
So it was really that I have been an Almodovar fan for many years, and this is one of the last ones that I had on my list for a while, and then it was finally released here so I could see it. So I just remember anticipating, you know, seeing it finally after many years, and I finally got to see it. And then when you guys were discussing the movies that you wanted to see, I was like, oh, that's one that I would like to revisit because it had been a long time since I had seen it since the first time. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's also Antonio Banderas in his last collaboration with Almodovar before The Skin I Live In. So he had, this was his fifth film with him. And then it wasn't until, so, and this was 1989. And then it wasn't until 2011 that he did The Skin I Live In. So, so that's an interesting little tidbit about it. And I think Banderas is great in it. I mean, he kind of gets to just chew the scenery the whole time, you know? So it did do pretty well in the award circuit, all things considered, which I didn't really look into until I was, you know, preparing for this. So I learned that it was nominated for 15 Goya, what do they call them? Goya Awards. That's the Spanish kind of Oscars, including director, lead actress, supporting actor, screenplay, and score, and what they call best film, which is really like, it's the same for us. It's the producers. So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, actually, it was a huge hit in Spain. I think it was the number one film of the year there.
Wow.
But it didn't win any. It only got nominated for all those, and it didn't win.
Should it have, though?
No,
I mean,
it's
a good movie, but it's a good movie. It's probably just, you know, I'll jump in. Just personally speaking, I have not seen this, but it's of the ones that we've watched, it's probably my favorite of the ones that we've watched, just because it doesn't have that sort of madcap plotting that all like 16 different threads tried to tie together in the very end with a race to the airport thing. You know, it's more streamlined. It's incredibly problematic. Let me just say that there. But I thought Banderas and the female lead, Victoria Abril, were great. And it was a bizarre story, but I found it really, really compelling and constantly entertaining. I was kind of dreading watching it. But, it's probably my favorite that I've seen thus far.
I still like women on the verge of a nervous breakdown. That's still my favorite. But I appreciated this movie. I do think that you're right. There's a chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah.
That they're great. And I think it has probably one of the best sex scenes I've ever seen in a film.
It reminds me of like looking like at Fatal Attraction when Glenn Close and Michael Douglas have sex in the kitchen and she takes the... She turns on the cold water and just starts spritzing herself. And I'm like, how did they film that without not actually having sex? Like, I know the rumor.
That's what
is
I thought
with
this
did.
One too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, really, I can't imagine Michael Douglas and Glenn Close. I think Glenn Close is too much of a pro to have sex with Michael Douglas.
Joey, what did you think?
I really liked it. I think I remember, it's funny, Jim, that you bring up that, you know, it was hard to find this movie for a while because you couldn't find it. It was unavailable. You couldn't find it like on, you know, streaming. You couldn't find it on like a physical DVD of it. Like I have a friend from back home who I know he's mentioned this movie to me and he was just like, of course there's Tommy and Tommy Dam, but you can't find that. So I'm glad that it's totally accessible now. You should find a friend who has the Criterion Channel membership and you can watch it. I find it's interesting that I was reading an interview that
I said that interview.
Pedro Almodovar said that this was a culmination of their entire actor-director relationship. Said it marked the peak of all the characters we had created together more than any other. It's a film that rests exclusively on your shoulders and the law of desire. You're marvelous, but Tommy up, Tommy down, establish you once and for all.
Wow. That's when did he say this?
in an interview in 2002.
So I wonder how he feels about Pain and Glory, whether that is now, like, has taken this place.
I wonder. Probably, maybe.
Yeah. Who knows? Or maybe it hasn't.
And I know I bring this up every single month that we talk about a Pedro movie. This is the last time I'm going to be able to do it until we talk about Pain and Glory. But this is, like, dear God, he's so hot. And anyway, this was, like, the first time that I watched a movie where there was, like, someone who was kidnapped and – or, like, someone who was a bad character, quote-unquote bad character, where I was a little bit hypnotized by how good-looking he is. Like, anytime that I
– I figured you were.
But – because, Jesus Christ, I'm only human. But it's, like – but, like, I was really surprised whenever – when it all goes down at the beginning, like the violence at the beginning, I was like, oh, holy fuck, that's messed up. And I was really surprised by how it ended because of that.
Well, I have a theory on that. I do want to say that after having, this is the third, well, I guess technically fourth film I've seen, maybe fifth, I don't know, of Pedro Almodovar. And I've noticed some, like, things about his characters are incredibly blunt. Like the one in the beginning, whenever Marina is helping the one interviewer, like she's helping her down off a platform. She goes, "Oh, you're kind of chubby, aren't you?" And I'm like, "What? Why would you say that?"
It's but like, they first all of all, talk she's like that. Not.
But the, yeah, right. I know. I was like, "Wait, what?" The thing that people should be talking about is her loud shirt, which is also okay, but that's the first thing I noticed about her. but I was just like, I feel like in every movie they say things that are like, oh, you're going to actually say that to a human? And that's like every character in this. They just say whatever they feel. And that's in other movies too, I've noticed. And then also they have amazing costumes. That's the other thing. And the colors are always so vibrant and I love it.
So much red.
Yes. And just like, oh, I love it. I love the colors. I love everything she wore. Like, I love that she, like, you know, getting dressed, you're kidnapped and she's like putting on a fabulous dress. I was like, geez, I'd be like, I want to put on my yoga pants. I'm not putting on a dress.
Actually, talking about the color red, when she picks up the phone that she has, in the sort of the Spanish take on Phantom of the Opera at the very beginning, or Phantom of the Wrestler Ring, or whatever that his costume is, the phone reminded me of the one that they used in Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. It's that same red phone.
It may have been the same one because the films were initially, he was trying to film both of them at the same time in order to cut back on production costs. So ended up using that. I can't confirm it, but I know, for instance, that initially they were going to use the penthouse from Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown in the same Phantom of the Opera scene that you were just talking about. It ended up not happening because they had broken down the scene already before they shot the scene. So it could be that they used the same prop though.
Well, there's also the, Marina's sister Lola goes to water the plants at the apartment next door. I swear to God, it's the same plants in the same balcony that they used in the Nervous Breakdown.
I thought about the when they were walking in the streets that night. I'm like, this looks like when they were chasing, when she was chasing the wife around. It reminded me, the streets reminded me of that. So I totally get that vibe too.
So one thing that I found really interesting about this whole thing, and we've already talked a little bit about this, but I want to dive into sort of the rating situation that came about when it was released in the States. It was initially branded with an X, and it was to be released under Miramax. So of course it involved Harvey Weinstein, and he sued the ratings board to try to get it, I guess, an R. But it helped usher in, along with Henry and June later that year, the NC-17 rating. If this were released today, do you think it would be branded an NC-17.
No.
Yeah. And Megan, I think you mentioned this, but I think the only reason that it even got close to that was because of the scene where Marina pleasures herself with the bath toy, which I don't even know where she got the toy, but anyway, got that little.
I love that scene.
That's amazing.
It was so funny. I was like, is this a thing that I don't know about?
I know. I was like, is that a toy specifically designed for that or what?
Because like even when the way it's shot is amazing, because it's like, oh, a bath toy. Oh wait, it's legs. Wait, where's it going?
Yeah,
I loved it. I loved that. That was great. I thought that was so funny. And also, like, it's a sexy movie, too. She's beautiful. And he's, of course, beautiful, too. And so I also kept thinking of, like, things that my dad had said to me about, like, anytime I'd say, oh, that guy's creepy. And he would say, like, oh, if he looked like, you know, Brad Pitt, you would be thinking, you'd be thinking differently. And I feel like that. This film kind of posits that in the beginning. It's like, oh, this ridiculously good-looking guy comes to your door and you're freaked out because you don't know him. And even though he's Antonio Banderas, you're still like, okay, he beat the shit out of me. I'm not going to like him. You know, like it proves that fact that just because, you know, somebody is good-looking doesn't mean that you're going to fall for them. But then over the course of the film, she does, which I was like, oh. But I also think that it's because of Stockholm syndrome, like clearly, and so that's what I was kind of struck by, was like how she's so strong in the beginning and so like she knows, like, okay, get away from me and I'm just gonna put up with this until I can get rid of him. But then it's like, I don't know what the switch was. Maybe I want to ask you guys about that. What do you think the switch was for her
when they had sex?
No, before that, what made her want to have sex with him?
That he was injured and, you know.
I think that's what it was, her seeing him injured, which is weird.
Don't you think it's something maybe to do with him being, I'm not going to say this correctly, but, like, something to do with, like, how lonely he is and, like, he's not, like he doesn't have, you know, he basically admits to her that he has no family and he never has. And he's been, you know, he's basically been, you know, had this weird, not weird trajectory his whole life, but he kind of has. Like, maybe she felt bad for him.
And I think I think a lot of women, myself included, have fallen for things like this, where not necessarily where you're being physically abused, but that, like, oh, I want to take care of him, I want to fix him type of thing. And I think that's why at first I was like, oh, I'm so angry with her. But then by the end of it, I was like, oh, this is kind of probably the real response in this case, which is why I love the juxtaposition of the film that she's doing, where she defeats the guy and, like, ties him up, you know, she ties him up and then saves the day and, you know, and wins out. And I think, like, in not to go to the final scene, but the final scene of the, like, happy ending where she's, like, kind of crying and is emotional is like a little bit of a realization that she wasn't able to be the hero that she is in the movies.
Yeah, I think that's interesting.
I actually kind of, this is my own sort of thing. I sort of wanted what she does in the movie, like the movie that she was filming. I wanted her to do that to him at the end of the real movie.
That would have been cool too. Like, they could, I mean, as a woman, I feel like I, in some ways I shouldn't be like saying good movie, but I
what were you saying?
You know, like, I shouldn't be like, good movie. She should be with her captor. But it's, I mean, he kind of wears her, and it is Stockholm syndrome too. The one who I'm the most mad at is her sister for being like, okay, you're a part of the family now. See, we're getting along. Like, you're not helping.
let me get you a job.
Yeah. Like, what?
the car's stolen. He broke into the apartment. He's kidnapped her sister, but she's going to get him a job. I mean, how's that reference?
Right. Yeah, right.
But it becomes a kind of a screwball comedy at the end, almost. Not screwball, but a romantic comedy. To the point where they're driving away singing a song in the car.
But then, Jim, I do have a question for you. Do you think that him being a great lay clinched it for
her? Clinched it for me.
It kind of seems that way. And, you know, from the beginning, we have this knowledge that he is a great lay, right? Because there's the woman that he's leaving the mental.
Yes.
Yeah, and she says, hang on a second. She says, the mad, passionate moments you gave me.
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of know that about him from the get-go, and he uses it, you know, to get what he wants.
Yeah. Doesn't he mention at some point the fact that he turned off his crazy so that the doctor could, so he could get out? Like, doesn't he say something to that effect? Maybe
something like that. Like, a judge found him not crazy anymore, so they let him out or something.
Maybe he fucked him. We don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it isn't a Motorola movie. Anything is possible.
I'm just glad there wasn't any incest in this one.
Yeah. I thought that was the movie was lacking.
Lesbian incest?
Well, you know, one thing I read that I didn't know before seeing it this time was that the film was made during it's called the Movida Madrileña. It's called the Madrid scene. And it was a countercultural movement that took place mainly in Madrid during the transition from Francisco Franco in 1975, coincided with economic growth in Spain and the emergence of a new Spanish identity, which was characterized by freedom of expression, transgression of taboos, use of recreational drugs, and a new spirit of freedom on the streets. So when I read that, I was like, okay, that's why Almodóvar packs his films with drugs and taboos and, you know, freedom of expression.
That's interesting. Mm.
And I didn't know that before. And I was like, okay, that, you know, it, like a light went off, you know, on
tracks.
A light went on.
I also read something fairly interesting from Roger Ebert's original review of this, which is he was lukewarm on it, but he said you can get away with the sort of the kidnapping and the you know, all of that stuff because it seems like these characters almost act like they know they're in a movie.
That's interesting, and that's kind of true.
There isn't a sense that this is. That she was ever in jeopardy, that she never feels that afraid. Like in the scene where right after he knocks her unconscious, she gets up to go take a pill. Like she doesn't try to run away. Yeah, she throws a glass at him, but I mean, you know.
And she doesn't even put up a fight when she thinks he might rape her. She's just like, if you want to have sex, okay.
Go ahead and do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what? Okay. I guess it is Antonio Banderas. Joey would be like, okay. And he'd be like,
I would suggest it first.
Like, do you want to rape me? And I picture him on the bed, like Austin Powers style.
Ebert's main criticism of the film was that it didn't go far enough exploring sort of the sexual depravity that could happen from, you know, falling in love with your accuser or having a sexual relationship with not accuser, but your kidnapper. Didn't explore that enough. It just was never taken that seriously.
I mean, that's kind of true because it's like there's a like the switch where he comes back beaten up and it's like, oh, like now it's turned into we care about each other. And it's like, what? Like, it was just like, wait a minute. Up until this point, she's, you know, trying to get out. You're rooting for her. You're like, oh, she ever. It's like a drama. And then it turns into, you're right. It pushes it to that point. And then it's like, let's make this happy.
Something else. I really loved the score in the beginning of the film.
Oh,
I know. But as I was. Yeah, it's Ennio Morricone. But then I realized that it kind of disappears once it gets away from the sort of quote psycho stalker mental patient aspect, and about halfway through that score completely goes out. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but I just read on Wikipedia that Almodovar didn't like his score, so he stopped using it.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I did notice like at one point when he's carrying her across the hall to the different apartment, it's like very romantic. And like, I'm thinking, yeah, no, why are you playing swooning music? And that's why I was like, movie, what are you doing? What are you doing?
But it's very theatrical that way.
Yeah.
I found the movie entertaining just because it's kind of crazy of the things that it does and the things that it asks the audience to believe. But I don't think it's particularly well thought out.
I don't, except that I do like the idea that of thinking about it in terms of the Marina character, and maybe, you're right, that's not thought out well, but like maybe that it's about her as an actress versus her as a person. I mean, that's me reading into it, that like, cause her crying at the end looked like she was like, oh shit, what have I done? Type of like, it wasn't like, I'm so emotional cause I'm so happy. It was like, I'm scared. And I wondered about what the movie was really trying to say. So maybe in that case, you're right. Maybe it wasn't well thought out. But I did kind of appreciate that little turn at the end that was like, oh, well, maybe she's not. It's not really a happy ending.
It's almost like it dawns on her that she's no longer a captor. She no longer has to go through the motions of this captor versus feelings for him that she has within the confines of that apartment, right? So she's like, okay, I'm free. Wait, is this what I want? You know?
Yeah. Because would you want to suddenly be like, you know what, this isn't working with that guy?
Right.
Oh my God. Or he's like, I'm going to slit your throat, then slit my throat. He says that multiple times.
Yeah.
I do love, I wanted to say, I do love that Rossi, and I apologize if I'm butchering the pronunciation of her name, but Rossi De Palma appears in this film. She's the woman that he steals her.
Yes.
He's the drug dealer. She's the reason that he gets beat up because.
Yes.
She's a drug dealer, and he steals her. Does he steal her drugs or her money or both? I can't remember.
I thought he stole everything.
Yeah.
I thought he just stole the drugs.
But yeah, it was coke and the pills.
I love her so much, and she's actually my favorite part of Women on the Verge, too, because
I love her, too.
Gazpacho, and then she passes out for, like, most of the movies. So.
I was excited to see her in this, too. I was like, yeah. I know her.
Yeah, she's amazing. So when we saw her, I was watching it with my husband. We clapped and cheered when we saw her.
I also wondered if the other girl in it, was it... I thought the other girl in it was the doctor for some reason. I forget what her name was in Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, the one with the short hair who was involved with the mob or whatever. I thought she was in this too, but I could be wrong.
You're talking about the doctor at the end, right?
The doctor in the, in the middle of it.
Not the one.
That oh, you, okay. But the other one. I know I think you're talking about. Because I thought that.
Yeah.
It is her.
Is it her? Okay. Candela?
Yeah, it's Candela.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, is that her? That was great seeing her. I was like, oh, she's happy and has two kids. So it's good for her.
Oh, and that's another scene where I think she starts to melt a little bit onto him. Oh, is that he's a family man. the crazy mental institution, the guy from the mental institution, is playing with the kids, and oh, look what a great dad he could be.
See, and in that scene, I was just like, oh my God, I'm so scared for those kids. Like, I know. I'm like, and Joey's meanwhile like, hey, drop the kids. Let's go.
I'm the wrong demographic for this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, the film has some social class commentary, too, that I find interesting. So there's they're filming the film with the Phantom of the Opera scene. And then when they cut, it follows what is her name? The woman, Marina, follows her outside. And there's these peasants with a horse, and she's like talking to them. Oh, yeah. And so meanwhile, there was like this, not Hollywood, but there was like this, you know, film production going on inside. And then later when they go to the pharmacy, the pharmacist is like pushing the black market on them.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's this bizarre retirement commercial that plays.
Oh, yeah.
TV that sheds light on the economic divide of the country, but also has random Nazis in it. And it's just
that was
like
so weird.
It's so weird, right? And there's like all these kind of there's drug dealers trying to make a living. And then something that I want to mention. Have any of you guys been to Spain?
No.
No.
Okay. So I've been to Madrid. And there are these amazing street cleaners there that come out every night and they clean the streets. And I know it doesn't sound entertaining, but I was there with my sister and she had lived in Spain before. And so we were visiting again and we literally spent like a half hour to an hour just watching the street cleaners clean the streets because it's so interesting. They're like little like doozers, you know, like from Fraggle Rock. Like they're so,
oh my God,
you know. And anyway, the reason I'm bringing them up is because they're in the film and they're called limpieza, which means cleaning. So it's just another part of the social class commentary that I really
and they clean Antonio Banderas, and that's kind of the turning point for him, where almost like she sees his sins as cleaned after that and accepts
right
him.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I really enjoyed that, the social class commentary. And it's very subtle, but it works.
Yeah.
I mean, we can go back to the retirement commercial if you guys want to talk to discuss there.
No, but, it's just like the Germans, the Spanish person is so poor because they don't plan. But meanwhile, the Germans have been planning and it has the little Nazi kids. Mm-hmm. I was like, what the hell? Like, am I watching? Did it change over to like a Mel Brooks movie?
Yeah, I
actually think I mumbled out loud. I was like, there are swastikas in this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wasn't ready for that.
Different movie.
What did you guys think of the subway metaphor for Ricky's life? So he calls it the Grenadilla Marina line. And it's like the idea that all these events in his life are subway stops, and the last stop is her. I thought that was
totally creeped out by it.
I think that is fucked up. I was just like,
yeah,
oh.
I was like, Marina, get out of there. Marina, get out. And then I'm like, she doesn't buy this. I kept thinking she's just playing along right now, right? I kept hoping she's just playing along. She's just playing along. And then she wasn't.
I was hoping her to be like, oh, nope, there's one more stop. Look over here.
That's what she's thinking about at the end. She's like, where's
yes
that next stop?
Right. At the end, it's like, oh, my God, what have I done? Like,
Well, actually, the thing that I kept thinking of the whole time I was watching this movie was, I was like, is there somebody out there right now, like, quarantined with someone that they hate?
Thinking about that a lot. I've been thinking about the people who are kidnapped and stuff like that.
Well, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that. I just meant,
I think about that. I think about who's been kidnapped and is stuck under these circumstances.
Or,
like,
or women in an abusive relationship.
Yeah. I think about that a lot.
That's what I thought. Well, I did think that, but I didn't. I was thinking about that the entire movie. So this selection is a little too timely, I guess. I don't know. I was just like, ew.
I was curious to hear what you guys thought of the Maximo character. He's the director in the wheelchair.
I love him. I love, even though he's a dick and he's a sexist misogynist, but I love when he's just spinning around in his electrics. I could have watched that for an hour and a half. He just like, and then at one point he's mad, like when she's not there, doesn't he continue to spin? Like he's just like, I thought he was an interesting character okay. So did he have a camera in her apartment where he was able to watch her?
No.
Like, how did he have that video of her masturbating?
I think that was because she was a porn actress.
Oh, see, I didn't get that. I missed that.
Oh, well, when he tells the journalist interviewing him, she says, you know, why would you have somebody in your film that's a drug addict and a porn star? And he's like, don't ever say the word porn and junkie again.
Okay, I think I missed the porn star part. I got the junkie part. I guess I didn't quite tie her to the porn star, I guess. I don't know why. That's weird. Sometimes I feel like it is such a fast movie. Like, and even with I noticed that the dialogue is fast sometimes too. And I feel like I could watch this again. But okay, that makes sense. So because I thought he had, like, he was bugging her at first. And I thought, well, why doesn't he go in and save her? If he knows, like, that she's been, like, kidnapped.
This is really bizarre, but in the scene where he's riding, or he's doing donuts in the wheelchair, I immediately had this thought of Martha Dump Truck from the Heathers film, because she also does that. And when I looked it up, those films came out the same year. So I'm like, what is with, like, doing donuts in wheelchairs in movies for that year, you know?
Oh my god.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I didn't even tie that together. That's really funny.
I did like a lot the filmmaking commentary that's in this, and I wish it had carried through a little bit more into the back half, but they abandoned it. But I really love those over-the-top scenes where it's almost like a Motivar is directing a parody of his own movies, where the quote-unquote phantom guy is wearing a mask and he's dressed in all red and he's got a red flowing cape and the curtains are red and the phone is red and everything is red. And I just found that very entertaining.
Yeah, that scene is great. I half expected it to be, because it had been a while since I had seen the film, so I was like, wait, is that going to be Ricky under the mask? Like, I couldn't remember.
Oh, that would be a twist.
Yeah.
All right, anything else we want to say about Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down?
No, I don't think I have anything else.
Nope.
I don't think so.
Okay, cool. So next month, in the end of May, will be, as if I had to remind myself what month this was, let alone what day, is All About My Mother with awardswatch.com's own Eric Anderson.
Oh, how exciting.
Yes, looking forward to it. That's actually one I have seen before, so I'll be revisiting it. Okay, so let's jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Jim, are you prepared to go?
Sure. So Joey mentioned that he started watching the series Hollywood. So I'm looking forward to that on May 1st. And continuing Drag Race and Secret Celebrity Drag Race?
I think they should have kept it a secret, if you ask me.
I mean, what is the secret, though? It's just that you don't know that it's on because it just shows up after Drag Race. Is that the secret?
That is a good question. Maybe the secret is that it sucks.
I don't think it's that much of a secret.
I was going to say, I think the secret's out now.
All right.
I was glad to see, though, at least that they're going to be, because at first I didn't know what the format was. I didn't know if they were going to have the same people on every episode. And then when I saw the preview for next week, I was like, oh, okay. So they're going to have like three different queens, three different, you know, actor or whatever, celebrities. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'll wait till I see some actual celebrity. I'm such a bitch.
We know.
All right. I don't know if either of you watch or if any of you watch a lot of HGTV, but are you familiar with the Property Brothers?
Yes, and they're doing a celebrity thing right now, right?
Yes, and it's got like actual celebrities, like Brad Pitt. I don't know, I don't watch it, but it's got Viola Davis and Brad Pitt and
Melissa McCarthy went on too.
Melissa McCarthy, yeah.
Like, wow. Yeah, I thought about watching that, but then I saw the Property Brothers. I'm like, my hatred of the Property Brothers, like lose to the celebrities, and I'm like, I just can't bring myself to watch it yet.
I won't be watching, and I'll tell you that.
Yeah, just go on Twitter and look at pictures of Brad Pitt riding a bicycle in a very bizarre way. I'm sure you've all seen that, right?
No.
Oh, yeah, there's some picture of him in a newsboy cap riding a bike, but he's like side saddling it or something.
I saw him with the news cap. I did not see the bike.
Yeah, go look at his bike and watch him riding the bike. Anyway, Joey, what are you looking forward to this week?
Okay, well, I'm actually very interested into what people think of Hollywood. I've seen all of it. It's actually a very easy watch. It's only 7 episodes. So it's easy watch. I actually think that they would maybe even make a season 2 of this. I don't think this is going to stay a limited series. I don't know how they would do it after that last episode, but I won't talk about that. But I'm interested in what people think of it. And then also I'm catching up on some other TV. I'm in the middle of McMillions right now.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's what's that lead guy's name? The guy who's the
Doug.
Yeah. Is that the guy?
Doug Matthews.
Yeah.
Yes. I love him.
I actually knew within like 30 seconds. I was like, that's the guy Megan likes.
Yeah. He's so funny. He's just like very charismatic.
Yeah. He's sort of like he's charismatic enough that you're just like, ah, ha, ha, this is a silly FBI case. So whatever. I've seen a couple episodes. I really like it. But I think that's pretty much it. Just catching up on TV. There's nothing a lot that I'm like super, super, super anxious for, other than I know I interviewed one of the actresses of One Day at a Time. The episode coming up on Tuesday is the last episode they filmed, because they were only able to film 6 episodes, and I'm really sad because I love that show. So I'm looking forward to that on Tuesday on Pop TV.
Megan.
So I need to finish This Is America. I'm still watching that. And then I want to watch Defending Jacob, because I am interested in that. And then I've been watching Survivor and The Masked Singer. I'm catching up on that because I'm talking to a costume designer, I believe, this week, which I'm so excited about because I have so many questions. Like, as I'm watching, I'm just like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm going to talk to the costume designer. So that, and then probably just watching some more AFI movies. I'm thinking Sullivan's Travels is one that I want to see. MASH. I'm trying to maybe hit some comedy, since I did a lot of dramatic stuff this week, and it was kind of a bummer.
Okay. So this coming up week, I'll be watching Sixth Sense, I think, unless we change our minds. But also catching up on Showtime's Return to the Penny Dreadful Universe, City of Angels, which, as we're recording, premieres tonight, or as I like to call it, art direction and costume design, the series, because it looks great. Now, whether or not it is good, I have no idea, because Penny Dreadful kind of dropped off for me. And catching up on screeners, I'm actually rewatching Mrs. America with my wife. So that is that's good. And we're revisiting Dead to Me because the second season starts on May 8th. So Christina Applegate.
That's exciting.
She's so great in that show. She's so great. Like, really, I know we talked about her, but wow, I just don't think people were talking about that performance enough. She's just fantastic. And all right, so does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3 M's, contributors Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Molloy, plus special guest Jim Keller, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant and safe tomorrow.